It's not particularly surprising that there's an ongoing project to translate all of Shakespeare's works into Klingon. Updating Shakespeare for the Star Trek generation seems simply another sign of the Bard's simply limitless adaptability. Over the last 2 years in London, we've been able to see a rap version of Comedy of Errors, an Icelandic circus version of his Romeo and Juliet, and a 16th century Indian version of his Merchant of Venice. In 2004, the Al Jazeera website even ran an article asking, was Shakespeare a Muslim? Yet although Shakespeare's appeal seems infinitely translatable, it is through his Britishness that he has most assertively mapped out our cultural territory. He's the foundation stone of our theatrical tradition, he's embedded in our language, and according to the American scholar Harold Bloom, he even invented our humanity. This autumn, as part of its year-long celebration of the Bard, the BBC will screen a whole series of modern interpretations. Not to be outdone, from next April till April 2007, the Royal Shakespeare Company will present every single one of his poems, plays, and sonnets. But is it time to call, at the very least, a moratorium on our worship of the Bard? Do his works merit such a tireless appetite for revival? Or have we succumbed to what Peter Brook defined as deadly theatre, resurrecting museum pieces that merely pander to nostalgia? Shakespeare may have inspired artists as diverse as Keats and Kurosawa, yet in today's theatres and bookshops he is also taking up room that new talent could occupy. At the end of the day, do we really need to look to the first Elizabethan era for an exciting analysis of the second? I'm Rachel Halliburton, and I'm very pleased tonight to be introducing Michael Boyd, the Artistic Director of the RSC, the actor and playwright Kwame Kwe-Ama, to oppose the motion, Miranda Sawyer, the Observer columnist, and the playwright Adriano Chaplin, to propose that Shakespeare is indeed a millstone round the neck of British culture. Miranda, would you like to start?
Oh, please don't start with me. I've only just arrived.
But you've got to.
Really? Why me? Oh, right, okay. Sorry. This is really... It's going to be slightly off the top of my head. I've just walked in. So, unlike everybody else here, I'm not particularly educated in Shakespeare at all. By my history, I don't have history O-level. I did English up to O-level, and that was it. So when it comes to Shakespeare, it's just what, you know, I go into it as a normal punter. And as a normal punter, I've obviously been deluged in Shakespeare from the age of, well, from the year dot. The thing that I find difficult about it, and the thing that I find is a millstone around our neck, is the fact that you can't get away from it. There's a certain aspect of Shakespeare that we wish to celebrate. We wish to celebrate our Englishness within it, and I don't think that we're brave enough to think that there's anything else that's been as good since Shakespeare. We have the same attitudes towards the Brontes, we have the same attitudes towards... the Tudors, there's another kind of Elizabeth I yesterday on the television. And what it makes me think is that we're ashamed, perhaps, of what's happened since, that we're not as willing to celebrate our artistic endeavours. There are certain kind of pillars of our establishment, and Shakespeare is very obviously one of them. And although I do think that, obviously, some of his plays are fantastic, I do think that other plays... are not very good. I recently went to see Troilus and Cressida at the Globe, where it was an interpretation where all the actors spoke in the way that Shakespeare, well, supposedly linguists thought that people were going to talk in that era, and it took me 20 minutes to kind of understand what they were saying. But that was fine. That didn't really bother me. But the problem was, once I understood what they were saying, it was just rubbish. It was a really ropey play, And I sat there dutifully expecting kind of, you know, something really amazing to happen towards the end, and left it and just thought, really, if that had been written today, critics would have really ripped it apart. I think that Shakespeare obviously has some, you know, I mean, I'm not going to stand up here and say that Shakespeare's completely rubbish, because obviously he isn't. And he's written some amazing scenes and characters that people will always get into. However, I don't actually think that he's, for the modern audience, an amazing playwright, because I don't necessarily think that his plays always work for a modern audience. A lot of the wither my honour doesn't go down so well with modern audiences, and I'm not saying that means he's terrible, but it does mean that there are perhaps other plays that could be revived or used in a way to appeal to modern audiences in the way that they never are. It's always Shakespeare that's done. There's also a fact which perhaps comes of my ignorance and lack of education, which is I kind of got a lot of my education through music, and I was a kind of post-punk person when I got interested in music, and a lot of that is to do with obviously sloughing off the old and bringing in the new. And it's also to do with ownership and the fact that you can the new stuff comes from the heart, and perhaps it's too much of the heart and it needs to be more of the head. But I like the idea of new plays, of actors coming to it completely fresh, of us being able to watch actors without all the baggage that we kind of carry with Shakespeare, or with the kind of actors that are always commissioned to do Shakespeare, which is another problem that I have, because the people that are asked to do Shakespeare do it in a Shakespeare-y way. They do it in a kind of actor-y way, which as a kind of punter I find incredibly off-putting. You know, there's another... This is awful. I sound like I'm slagging everybody off. But anyway, I went to see... I did go and see the Julius Caesar at the Barbican, and it was a fantastically dramatic production. But Ralph Fiennes did his bit, and he was obviously pretty good. He's a pretty good actor. But he just came over, because he was being actorly in a Shakespeare way, like exactly like Rigsby in Rising Dump. I mean, it was just unbelievable, the likeness. And Fiona Shaw, who had a very small part, proceeded to attack it with such gusto that she kind of overwhelmed everybody else. And I kind of... There's an aspect to Shakespeare that encourages actors to do that, which I find rather disheartening as somebody who likes to go and see plays but perhaps is slightly ignorant of their history.
Okay.
That's it anyway. Sorry it's a bit rambly, but it was walked in and then spoke. Michael, would you...
Michael, would you like to hit back at that?
Okay. We've got Adriano Chaplin, the Berkeley Campus Theatre Studies Mandarin, and Miranda, the post-punk cultural commentator, who are both bored. They're blasé. They've seen too much Shakespeare. There's overexposure. But we think that probably 100,000 people a year come to see Shakespeare for the first time ever in Stratford every year. More people than that, many more people than that, are coming to see a particular play for the first time, and even more, I hope, as we get better at our art, are seeing a Shakespeare play made vivid for the first time. I can have some sympathy with the pair of them. I watch a lot of Shakespeare too. I see all the RSC shows at least two times, and usually three or four. But it's okay. I don't mind. Because in the end, the bottom line is that I think that Shakespeare is is an almost bottomless source of pleasure. I think he has the rhythm and the lyricism of Beethoven. I think he has the muscular passion of Ted Hughes. I think he has the clear-eyed metaphysic of Beckett, the stark beauty and the profound humanity of Picasso at his absolute best. He has the insight and wit of Matt Groening and The Simpsons, and the compassionate, paradoxical rigour of Philip Roth. And these are just a few of my favourite things, and I think Shakespeare kind of deals with all of them. They may be, we've heard of groaning bookshops and bookshelves, full of too much Shakespeare, and right now, of course, there is a complete explosion. But actually, right now, there are at least three books out that also show another thing that I do love about Shakespeare. We're beginning only now properly to understand how much courage and ability it took for Shakespeare, and how much of a deep personal need drove it to carve out a kind of semiotic coherence from a context of cultural darkness and conflict and chaos, in a world where you really weren't allowed to say what you meant. Now, in California and London, we may be slow to notice that, but Nelson Mandela wasn't in Robben Island as he annotated his bits of that boring old play, Julius Caesar, and passed them among the ANC members. As their way of subversively having conversations about tyranny in Robben Island Jail. Suleiman al-Bassam, who's Al Hamlet's summit, was a wonderful retake, remix of Hamlet recently, and who we've commissioned to do a similar job on Richard III. He finds it empowering for his theatrical voice in the Arab world. Yasmin Alibi Brown isn't slow to notice it in terms of her life as a young Ugandan Asian playing Juliet to a black Ugandan African Romeo, and what that did to her life. Lev Dodin isn't slow to notice it, as he has his piece of stolen earth from Shakespeare's grave, the graveyard round Holy Trinity, in a piece of shameless bardolatry. But it's because of the way Shakespeare speaks to him about the abuse of power and how that hurts. That suffering isn't good for you. It damages people. Patrice Nambaya, the Sierra Leonean British actor, his passion surrounding the character of Othello, which is full of conflict, full of contradictions and paradoxes, but he's going to play that part, and he wants to take over that particular corner of England and make it his for good and urgent reasons. Adriano Chaplin, the theatre maker, as opposed to the Berkeley Mandarin, is a writer, actor, director, and a theatrical entrepreneur in charge of his own ensemble, just like Shakespeare. He writes with a density and a lyricism of language that require those rhetorical skills of an actor that Miranda Sawyer dismisses as theatre darling overacting. His recent play, Switch Triptych, is so preoccupied with rhythm and meter that Adriano, the director, places a gentle musical metronome under the whole piece. He makes Peter Hall look a free-form shambles in terms of organised language. Switch Triptych is a period costume drama centering around three switchboard operators in the early 20th century New York, but there's no doubt in the writer's mind that the switch of the title also relates to Shakespeare's Three Witches. One of the central conflicts that drive the piece is between a corrupt, controlling, and brilliantly vivid New York Italian Catholic woman and the reforming zeal of a rational Protestant English woman who believes she can protect the switchboard operator's jobs through organized labor. It's a great piece of theatre. Go and see it. New plays can get hammered incorrectly by the critics too. It's a wonderful piece, and it's got Shakespeare crawling all over it. My only problem with the piece is that working on it has made Adriano a little late delivering his first draft on his Royal Shakespeare Company and MIT commission.
Oh my goodness, it's getting very below the belt here, and
I think we should... Adriano, the theatre maker, has no Shakespearean millstone round his neck. He's been evidently inspired by Shakespeare, and I have to say enthusiastically supported by this particular branch of the Shakespeare industry. As are Frank McGuinness, who's speaking like magpies, opened last night at the Swan Theatre. David Gregg, whose American Pilot is Patchy Switch Triptych, still my favourite new play of this year. Debbie Tucker Green, whose play about the sex trade industry premieres at the Swan next month, a 440-seater. Fraser Grace, whose new play Breakfast with Mugabe premieres at the Swan in 2 weeks' time. David Ajimi and Brett Nouveau, whose Elective Affinities and Eric LaRue open elsewhere in Stratford this month. Yasmin Alibi Brown's brilliant Nowhere to Belong, itself an eloquent account of her complex relationship to Shakespeare as an Ugandan Asian girl and woman. Most enough. Of these works. why is it enough?
Because you've got over your.
It's not nearly long enough. all of these. Okay, I'll skip two pages. This and much more nurturing of new work, which the Royal Shakespeare Company is doing. Protected under the wing of a company of actors who are also devoted to working with Shakespeare, and the Shakespeare work actually subsidizes the new work to some extent, which addresses contemporary culture directly. Yes, all these people are being at least subliminally invited by us at the RSC to tread the steel tightrope between the Renaissance and now, but are we really saying that Picasso would have been a great deal better of an artist without his lifelong inquiry into Velázquez? I don't think so. Velázquez and the fine art industry were no more of a millstone around Picasso's neck than Shakespeare and his industry are harming Adriano the theatre maker or any contemporary theatre makers.
Whoa. Adriano, I think the gauntlet has well and truly been thrown down. Can you hit back at that?
Wonderful. It's wonderful. There's a few things I need to... It's wonderful that... Thank you, Michael, for noticing the references to Shakespeare. It should be said that Rachel Halberton, our mediator, who works for Time Out, I mean, things like that, that kind of close reading is beyond a rag like Time Out, and they gave it a terrible kicking. So I appreciate Michael for correcting that. Someone will have to explain to me what a millstone is, because I don't know. And I also take issue with this thing in the press release about Shakespeare infantilizing us. I think people are infantilized by cars, not by Shakespeare. That said, I have a speech prepared. The theater. I speak to you this evening as a proud servant to the theater, as a young artist whose enthusiasm for and dedication to the theater is positively religious in its dimension, meaning it is passionate, blind, and predicated on crazy faith. And I welcome the opportunity this evening to condemn the Shakespeare industry, for they are most certainly guilty, and their sins against the medium, numerous. The Shakespeare industry, broadly defined as those who propagate and endlessly revive and reinterpret Shakespeare, are guilty of necrophilia. Necrophilia! That is, they are guilty of preferring the dead over the living, of taking pleasure in the manhandling and occasional penetration of his corpse, the barb. At best, they are skilled reanimators, exercising their Frankensteinian complexes with varying degrees of success. Can there be any doubt that this is a dubious and frankly irreligious pursuit? This fawning reverence, this bone digging, awful. That it reveals a deep conservatism in British theater regarding form is evident. But worse is the funereal odor which hangs above the English language theater in general, and I blame the Shakespeare industry for further clogging an already constipated British culture. Their greatest sin, and one which I'm sure Michael Boyd will confess to, is that they love Shakespeare more than they love theater, and are happy to lay their beautiful productions atop the casket of the very medium from which Shakespeare derived his strength, the medium he was once pleased to serve. And I damn the British critics as well. Because when it comes to Shakespeare, they're train spotters, plain and simple. Old white scribblers comparing productions as if we care. The critics behave just like the major producing companies do. They speak only to the audience theater already possesses, rather than the potential audience theater needs in order to survive and flourish. Head-achingly pointless debates about whether or not Shakespeare should be done in Prada. Yes! It should be done in Prada, or Gucci, or period dress, or whatever. Who cares? And shame on the directors who participate in this hollow, non-conversation about aesthetics. It's a self-serving feedback loop, and it's killing theater. Where is the new direction? Where is the formal innovation? What happened to new writing? Where are the major plays? What is being made in Britain right now? What will be revived and reinterpreted in post-apocalyptic dress, or maybe pre-apocalyptic dress, depending on where we are, in 400 years? What will be revived of what we make now in 400 years? And shouldn't the RSC, as servants to the theater, be concerning themselves with that very question? Isn't it all about the theater, the theater, the theater? Because after all, Shakespeare isn't universal or transcendental. He is not even a genius. He is a man who spoke beautifully through the theater, spoke through a theater uncorrupted by television or cinema or modernism. And if you don't maintain the pyramid, it may crumble atop your cherished mummy. And I'll say one last thing, which I'll tell you cynically and secretly, why Shakespeare may be a poor fit in our moment. And this is where I'm breaking out of this silly press release. And I'll restrict my comments, I want to say, Kwame, to the English language theater world, to England and the States. Shakespeare wrote great tragedies. He inherited the form, and he ran with it. But we don't live in tragic times. Our protagonists are not dignified or fabulous enough for tragedy. They are cowards and clowns. Instead of tragedy, we have only disaster and ignorance. And Shakespeare was too cool to write about disaster and ignorance. Thank you.
So Kwame, I think the only question is, do you think you're guilty of necrophilia?
Actually, I'm what I'm guilty of is drawing the short straw. I don't want to follow that. But alas, I shall. I mean, I think most of the points have been laid out, really. So I shall come off script and just speak from what I feel. Much like Miranda, actually, I knew very little about Shakespeare, and still do know very little about it. And I grew up actually hating Shakespeare. That's not surprising. I also grew up hating Bob Marley. And the reason I hated Bob Marley was because everybody would come up to me and say, "Hey, have you heard Three Little Birds? And, aren't you jamming?" And I really fucking hated it. And because of that, I hated Bob Marley. Until later in life, when I became a man and my consciousness grew, and I began to listen to what he was saying. And also, I was a musician. I loved jazz. And so I used to find reggae very simplistic with three chords. And I was like, what's this? I'm looking for the clash in there. And as I said, then I became a man and I began to listen to what Bob was saying and what his music and what vibration was coming off his music and his lyrics. Similarly, as an actor, when I became an actor, everybody thought, you know, the very first thing... If I remember, funny story, well, at least funny to me, a friend of mine who's at the Royal Shakespeare Company, a black actor, he met a friend in the street, and the friend said, "So what are you doing right now?" And he said, "Oh, I'm at the RSC." And he said, he goes, "Oh, I didn't know you was a mechanic." And similarly, but on the other side of that, you know, everybody would come up to you all of the time and you'd say, "I'm an actor," and they'd say, so, "How are you at Shakespeare?" And I'd be like, "I don't fucking know Shakespeare, and I'm not good at it, and I don't speak it, and it's not for me." But as a playwright now, as a man now, I look, and much like with my feeling with Bob, I feel the vibration of ages. And I would profoundly disagree with you when I say that we do not live in tragic times. I think this is the most tragic time in certainly within my life history, and one of the most tragic times that I can remember in reading history, and that is what I read, apart from the slave trade era, which I shall jump to for a moment, or in a moment. And I suppose what I'm saying is when I was growing up, and right up until the late 90s, The cry from the black acting community was that there were no parts for us. For as men, we would have to play boys all of the time. And as soon as you got out of the realm of playing a boy, there was no work for you. And our challenge was to the writers to say, "Why are you not writing black men?" Our cry was to the casting directors, "Why are you not casting us as men?" And sorry that I'm only talking about it from a masculine point of view. By the way, I must say, I'm tremendously pleased that Debbie Tucker Green's doing a gig for you. I love her. She's magnificent.
She's a genius.
She's a brand new love. Anyway, sorry. Yeah. We're on the same side, you know. But yet, what I could do as a writer later on was to use Shakespeare as rope to hang around the necks of artistic directors and narrative creators. I could say, in the Elizabethan era, there was a writer who wrote a black man at the center of a play, who wrote a Jewish character sympathetically at the center, also may argue, in the center of a play. Our arguments about multiculturalism, I just have to look at his work and see that there was a myriad. My first play was theatrical experience was my father's factory taking us to the RSC and seeing Much Ado About Nothing when I was about 10, and it just blowing me apart. And I could look at a playwright writing then and say that this creator of narrative got under the skins of other cultures. And so for that reason, and probably for that reason alone, I oppose the motion. Because I think that we should be using Shakespeare to hang all of those who do not understand that multiculturalism and writing from different cultural perspectives, particularly those who belong to your ethnic minorities in your country, that is not a new thing. This is not newfangled, and this is not political correctness, but that is something that is at the very heart of our British of the institution of art in this country. And so it is for that reason that I oppose the motion. Period.
So are we embracing death or are we embracing life by performing Shakespeare? I think it's time to throw this open to the floor now. We'd like you to stick to your time limits, unlike the speakers. So it's 1 minute per question.